Hello and welcome to the Greg Fearon podcast with your host, Greg Fearon. And today I've got an awesome Yinka Iwola. Ah, oh, see, I got it wrong. I knew I'd get it wrong. to join me today to talk about how we can fix your money mindset, how you as a business owner can stop hiding in the fear of what's going on around you and upgrade your money skill set. So, hey, welcome to the show.
Hi, Greg. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So we've only spoken really via LinkedIn and a few messages now and again, but I've been following your journey. So do you want to do a quick intro into who you are and where your magic is?
Okay, no problem. As you said, my name is Yinka Ewola. I am a coach. I am a consultant and I'm a business strategist, and I support women in business to create wealth in and through their businesses. And the way in which I do that is to support them to build thriving and profitable businesses while living full, fabulous, nourishing lives. And what we focus on are the things that make the most difference to the business and the business owner. So what makes the most difference to the business is strategy and cash flow. And what makes the most difference to the business owner is mindset and habits.
So that's where my magic is. This is going to be right up my street. Habits, mindset, I'm all over this.
I love it.
So how did you get to where you were now, first of all? Like, what made you start there?
I got here by way of a lot of blood, sweat and tears. So I began my career in investment banking, having done an economics degree. And I say that I was dragged into business, but the events, I say plural, that coincided to bring me into the business space. One was my mum was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she ran her own business and was, you know, she is a remarkable woman. And before I finish the rest of the story, I will say that my mom kicked cancer's butt. She went climbing up Mount Kilimanjaro to celebrate 10 years free of cancer. She is just, the fact that she's here with us still is just such testament to her resolve and her amazingness. But at the time, she was struggling, obviously, with her health diagnosis and struggling to keep her business afloat. Yeah. And it is too many fights to see a struggling business and a struggling business owner. Health is the ultimate wealth, and you can't fight on so many fronts at once. So I stepped out of my banking career, coinciding with me telling them that I was having my first child, having recently just got married, and them looking at me like I kicked their cat. And so I stepped into her business because she was leaving chemo early to go to client meetings. And we were like, no. So I stepped in. I didn't know anything about business at all. And I stepped into a business that was struggling because at the time it hadn't been structured to work without her. And so when you get into a business that is struggling and a business owner that's struggling, what that teaches you, apart from the blood and the sweat and the tears, is you have to learn exactly what matters and exactly what helps. You haven't got time for faff. You haven't got time to do the things that don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in a fight for survival. So, yeah, it was a real baptism of fire. I don't mind saying it was difficult and painful and challenging, but it was everything that has brought me to where I am today. And it was in that period that I learned the importance of cash and cash flow as a real kind of fundamental to business success.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also in that period that I worked out and realized the truism that I, you know, as it is now coined to me, that mindset is what separates the best from the rest. These were lessons that I had to learn the tough way and the hard way. It was difficult. And yet I'm grateful for every part of it because I'm now, I come as well, you can see in like my content and stuff, I come with a conviction that you can only come with when you know what you know and you know how you've learned it. There is a confidence and a conviction that comes from that urgency of knowing that we ain't got time for that stuff because that's not what's going to help us right now. So that was the beginning of my business journey, and as I said, it was difficult, but it was one that I'm incredibly grateful for.
Amazing. And I want to dive into this because we were speaking about this before the hour, before we started, and we were talking about the environment and the kind of how everyone's feeling in the world at the minute. So we're going through this. Well, we haven't had an official recession, but there's a lot of fear. People are trying to skimp on stuff, trying to save money. You said something to me that was really important. It was like, well, it's putting your neck in the, hiding your head in the sand like an ostrich isn't helping you. What did you mean by that?
I meant that we are often we often forget that doubt and fear, doubt is a belief. Doubt feels really certain, and because we are socialized, through the education system, through various structures designed to keep us exactly where we are socialized into into celebrating skepticism and leaning into fear and being most informed and all of those kinds of things. But doubt is just a belief. Doubt is a belief that something's going to go wrong, but it's not certain, and it's no more certain than faith, which is the belief that something is going to go right. And yet we default to faith, to fear, and we default to doubt because of negativity bias in our brains. Back in the day, if you were in danger, underestimating danger could get you killed. So you were smart to focus on danger. You were smart to worry more than not. But what we're also finding now is that, number one, the biggest pandemic in the world is absolutely fear. It isn't COVID. Fear is contagious as hell. And what we're seeing now is people being in fear, bathing in fear, like spending more time in fear than anything else, and then finding themselves in a place of inertia because they're burying their head in the sand because they've spent so much time in an environment of fear, and then they wonder why they're afraid. And
Intense.
the fact is that, yeah, that if you look around, if you spend enough time looking around, there's enough reasons to be afraid. But the important thing to remember is that it isn't your sight that's going to get you to where you want to go. It's your vision. And so it's, in my spaces and with the women I work with, I often say to them, okay, I know what we can see, but what's the vision? Because the vision is what we can't see with our naked eyes, and yet it is that vision that is going to get you to where you want to go. It's that vision that's going to tell you to keep moving forward even when everyone else is saying stop. And so, yeah, there is a real sense of ostrichness about people's behavior at the moment. People are very afraid, and there's no judgment in, as I said before. It was smart to be afraid. And yet, it isn't, fear is never the problem. It's what you do with fear and the position you give fear. Fear is a right member of your brain council. It is the worst leader of the brain council. Don't let fear be the leader. Give it a seat. Hear what it has to say. Provide it its requirements, but don't ever let it take the role of leader. And that's unfortunately what I'm seeing so much of right now. And it is making things worse through delay, through inertia, through telling themselves I'm stuck. You're not stuck. You know exactly what you need to do. You're just afraid to do it. So, yeah, it's and unfortunately, because the cost of inaction is mounting invisibly, they feel like doing nothing has no cost, and actually doing nothing has the highest of all costs, because time is that resource we're never going to get back.
Mic drop. I think we can end the interview there. If everyone just listened to that bit, that's it. Done. You don't need to, there's nothing else you need to hear. It's funny you talked about vision, because something that I'm very keen on with my clients is I talk about dream setting. So we don't do goal setting first, we do dream setting, and which is, I guess, very similar to vision. And I think a lot of people don't have a real vision. They'll say, I want to make money in, you know, in your space, or I want to lose weight. And that bores me to tears. I'm like, you don't want to lose weight. You don't want to lose weight. It's boring. You know what? How many times have
we tried? We don't want to lose anything, because we're trained to find the stuff we lose.
Yeah.
Like, release it, let it go, and tell it not to come back.
Exactly. Yeah, true. Very true. And I take it then a step further and say, well, what's the vision you have for your body and yourself and your health? Where do you want to be? You know, I want to be 90 years old and pain-free. So I train and I work out and I eat to be able to do that. If I just said I want to lose weight, boring.
Boring.
Boring. So you're saying that people or the ladies listening to this need to have that vision first.
Yeah, and you're right in terms of the vision first. The other thing, though, is they need to have prompts that remind them of the future, because we forget the future isn't a thing. Even the past isn't a thing. The only thing that's a thing is now. But because we continue to, A, you know, either not own what it is we want, particularly, you know, from a health or from a wealth perspective, we often are afraid to own our desires. And then if you do the work and you take the courage and you actually do own that, what we then forget to do is remind ourselves of the future. Because I can want a six-pack till tomorrow, but I can taste a donut today. And so what you have to do is have the things that remind you of the future that you want, because the future is intangible. You can't hug me next week. I can only hug you now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't bring the future into the now, it will keep remaining the future. It will keep remaining a dream. And so the parallels, you know, between your work and mine about, yes, set that incredible dream and then make that dream present today. Why are you going to do the hard thing today? Why are you going to take the uncomfortable decision today? Because you're remembering that this buys you the future you want. And so it gives you the opportunity to create something new and also transcend the fear. You know, part of what is fearful is when everybody's doing what everyone else is doing. And actually there is a lot of boldness that comes from doing different stuff. Mm-hmm. Doing what others won't do, so that later on you can do the things that others can't do.
Oh, told you were going to drop some bombs today. I told you, I had a feeling you were going to come with the
ego, my friend.
Pardon?
I said, you're good for the ego, I told you.
I knew you were going to drop some fire. So just looking at the business world, I think from what I see, I have a business, you know, I think there's a lot of people like not putting out offers, not being upfront with their prices and just telling people, hey, this is the investment, or doing lots of discounts. I'm seeing so many discounts right now. Like, I feel like I'm at the pound shop. So what tell me about that. What are your thoughts on that and what's going on?
It's scarcity. It's scarcity mindset. It comes down to fundamental beliefs, and pricing is something I spend a lot of time talking about. I spend a lot of time speaking to women about pricing because they price in ways that are not beneficial to their businesses. But also because I don't know who started the pricing conversation, but whoever did, I would have loved if they had highlighted a truism, which is that your price is sending a message. Your price sends a message. If someone offered you a Rolex on London's Oxford Street for £25, that's sending you a message. You and I both know that that the clock hand on a Rolex probably costs more than £25.
Yeah.
And so you know, it is, I understand. And you know, I am, you know, I support women to create high ticket offers. I support women to create, you know, low ticket offers, membership. There is a price for every customer. And therein lies the point. Because fundamentally, as someone who is supporting other women in their businesses, I'm also making sure I get support in my own. So I am constantly seeking out ways to add more value into the marketplace. Sometimes the value that I have to offer, you know, I'll put it in at 99 quid. Other times I will put it in at 25K. And the fact there is that both of those offers are worth way more than the money I'm asking for it. And so the challenge that I'm seeing around people not making offers, boy, that probably needs its own podcast. But what I will say there is that there are so many erroneous lies and myths that we have been taught about money, about ourselves, about business, such that people believe that, you know, the kindest thing they can do is, you know, that, you know, if I said to someone, go and offer your product, I'm like, okay, fine, go and give it away. And then they're like, okay, cool. There's loads of people I can give it away to. It is because they believe that the price and asking for money in return makes it less valuable or makes them less of a good person. And actually it's the opposite, because those who pay money pay attention.
Amen.
I know how many times I have given people free support, and I've then charged four figures for the same support, and I've seen those results without fail. There is not a single person who has paid who hasn't taken more action because they've got more skin in the game than the people who I gave it to for free. And that's why, you know, to a large extent, free is cancelled. And it isn't cancelled because I, you know, I'm very, very grateful for how, you know, my business is growing and how, you know, the impact that I'm able to have with women across the world, supporting them create consistent cash flow. So I can afford to do plenty of things for free, but I won't. Mm. And I won't because the value isn't there on the other side. I've had people sign up to things for free, things that were worth, you know, 500, 1K. People came to the event and then made five figures. And then other people, because it was free, they didn't even show up. And I'm like, part of the mantras and the support that I give to women is to recognize that your offer is not the end of a process. It's the start of a new one. You don't want people to buy your stuff. You want people to use your stuff. One of the things that helps people to use your stuff is the fact that they paid for it. The fact that they stretched. You know, it wasn't like, oh, I'm just dashing £5 or whatever. I stretched to make a payment. I now need to create the funds to, you know, make the next payment or do the next things. Now, all of a sudden, there is an ethical tension in there to help them to as I said, to stretch beyond that fear, to stretch beyond the vision, the sight that they can see, and stretch into their vision. And so, yeah, I see a lot of not offering and low pricing and, you know, discounts. I'm a strategist at heart, but I don't use discounts in my business. And it isn't because I can't. It's because at this juncture, discounts don't bring into my world the kinds of people that I'm seeking to work with. Like, there are people in the world who are price buyers. They are amazing. They are fabulous parents and sisters and brothers, and they are not my best type of clients. People seeking a bargain came in with a very specific way of thinking, and that isn't what I'm seeking in my spaces. So as a result, I don't use discounts. I prefer to use bonuses. But again, back to the kind of fundamentals of it, the whole idea is still around scarcity. Oh my gosh, if I have high prices, I'm not going to keep, you know, clients. No, you're not. You're not going to keep clients. And that is an amazing thing, because you are not for everyone. You're for the right people. And the part of being the right people is valuing what you have for the price you are putting it out there for.
Mm. Wow. It's funny. I remember one of my first ever coaching clients. I think I charged her £600 for 3 months. I know. Inka's like, where do I sign up? And I remember at the end of it, she said,
Is, I would never like, wow, that's deep. And that's the thing. I look at my first client and like I'm embarrassed. I'm not embarrassed, but you know what I mean? It's an embarrassingly low number. I use it as a signpost to celebrate how far I've come. Like right now, you couldn't add a zero and get me for that price for an hour. You couldn't. And yet I'm like, I was so like, you want to see the dance I danced when that person said yes, and when they paid that money, it was everything to me. And that's the thing, I so respect, you know, I'm a woman of faith, so again, I use a lot of biblical quotes, but I so respect those mustard seed beginnings. You cannot make a million without making one. So I'm like, make the one and then put the price up. But it's about understanding. It's very different. And again, this is an error of thinking and an error of teaching that I often see. You know, price low because you're just beginning. I'm like, what are you just beginning? Because ultimately, if I'm speaking to a woman in her 40s, you know, and you know, she went to uni and so she's got 2 decades experience in something. And so you might be just beginning what you're doing in this particular way, but you bring a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of experience and having to buy and prepare and eat meals every day. And I'm not paying for the time that I get with you. I'm paying for everything that you bring to the table to enable me to fast track to my solution. And as I
Amen.
said before, time is the resource we don't get back. And so one of the biggest mindset shifts I see when women really get it is they start treating their time and they switch how they treat their time and their money. So they start spending their money because they recognize that time is the valuable piece.
You've hit the nail on the head. There's a quote that says, and it's a big one for me, was successful people value their time over money.
100%.
They will spend the
100%.
time to get someone that they'll hire a cleaner, they'll get a chef.
I love my cleaner so much.
Well,
I
what
love
is,
her so much.
but
She
this
just,
go on.
I want that, and that's the thing. Like, I'm good at cleaning. Like, I am good at clean. I'm a Nigerian girl. You know, like we like the chores were real. Like, I'm good at cleaning, but why would I? Why would I not outsource that opportunity so that I can go and use that time in other spaces? And so, I just. Yes, I listen and I watch and I look at people and I the thing, and again you'll love this particular quote, you can't outsource, you can't phone in your sit-ups, you have to put in the reps yourself. And so when I watch people and they're like, oh, you know, I'll come back to you in 3 months, I'll come back to you in 6 months, I'm like, okay, you are not ready, and I am not in the convincing business. I'm never one to convince you to come use my stuff. So of course I'm gonna let you go, but it ain't gonna be better in 6 months. It's gonna be worse. It's gonna be worse. And I wish you valued your time the way that you're currently trying to value and hold on to your money.
Is this something to do though with the stories that we've, well, with the conditioning we've got? You know, we've all seen our mums, especially mums, cleaning all the time, and they would scrimp and save to find some money for us for those pair of trainers that we always wanted.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. We've all come up in some really interesting circumstances. There isn't a single one of us who hasn't experienced, if we haven't experienced big T trauma, we've definitely experienced small T trauma. And, you know, our parents did the same. You know, you and I both live, you know, as members of countries of the global majority, we live as ethnic minorities here in the UK. So, you know, racism is real. Like, I totally get, there are people, I've met people all the time who say, you know, no, it isn't. You know, that was then, this is now. I'm like, that's like, as
Really?
I said, yeah, I meet people like that, even now, black people as well. And I'm like, I love that you think that. And I'd love to know what color the sky is in the world that you live in, it's really different to mine. But also, I'm not in the convincing business. If you think that you that racism doesn't exist, live your life. I am, unfortunately, Britain is good at educating you on what is and isn't true. So I will put that to one side for a second. But growing up how we grew up, there's always going to be stories we need to unravel to get to the truth. Mm-hmm. But as you know, it takes courage to seek truth, because we live in a culture, you know, that feeds us lies, like cultural comfort food. They lie. Like so much of what we're told is lies. And that's by design. You know, the people benefit when people believe the lies that we're told from a cultural perspective. And so it creates a need for those who want to find that truth it's not just going to come to you. You're going to have to go and find it. You're going to have to exert yourself. And so, yeah, we have watched a lot of challenges, and we've lived through a lot of different challenging situations. But at the same time, we're grown now. So, you know, whatever it was that we had or learned or experienced as kids, we are grown. You know, I'm a parent, I believe you're a parent as well, and you know, it's for us to do better than what we had when we were children for our children. And so it's for us to now learn and grow, and you know, if it requires discomfort, then we go sit in that discomfort. But what we can't afford to do is say, oh well, that's how it's always been, and this is how I came up. And you know, we get one life, we get one wild and precious life. And so, again, we're back to that time. Time is limited. There is no time to sit around just believing what we're spoon-fed. It really is important that we look at why things were the way they were. But more importantly, if you want different, you're going to have to do different. And so, you know, whichever arena, health, wealth, all the things, it is about doing the different that gets you the results that you want. Your results are telling you exactly how you're doing, no matter what. Yeah, I'm a big impact focused believer. Your results are telling you exactly what's going on, whether you choose to side eye it, not look at it, you know, not open your bank statements, not stand on the scale. You weigh what you weigh, and what's in your bank account's in your bank account.
Another mic drop, we can end the podcast there too. Right. But it's true, right? So, you know, but like you said, society will tell people, oh, you know, you can be healthy at any size and stuff, when the data doesn't, it tells us the complete opposite. And you're like, that doesn't make sense.
And not only does it not make sense, but the thing I would also say, and this is why I love so much of what you do and what you put out there, the fact is that so much of, you know, the science of wealth or the science of health was designed by very specific people looking at very specific things. So, for example, you know, for us in the UK, you know, the kids going into school, they get their BMI taken, and almost every single little black kid will be told that they're off the charts. And you know, parents are, you know, I'm a governor of a school, and, you know, every year the parents are like, why are you telling me my child is X or Y or Z? And every year we have to say the same thing. You know, BMI was created in a very specific way, looking at a very specific data set, and you weren't included. You weren't included when that measure was created. So the question now, though, is what do you want to do with the information you've got? Like, I am not someone who can go and change the BMI chart. I am also not someone, though, who believes, like, that, you know, in everything. But it's important, like, the data has to, we are given the opportunity through data. And now what are you going to do with it? We're learning more about the importance of sleep, the importance of hormones, the importance of hydration, you know, you know, macronutrients, micronutrients, gut health. You know, these are things that the ideas that were nowhere to be found 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And yet we are learning more and more every day. The point is that the data is the data. What do you want to do with it? And it is also about recognizing, as I said before, we just get one life. If the idea that you can be healthy at every size works for you, and that's how you want to live your life, please carry on and do go be amazing. I'm not going to tell you otherwise, but the results will. And when they do, we are big grown adults, and I believe really strongly in the importance of personal responsibility and sovereignty. And because I believe in sovereignty, I'm not here to convince you of the of otherwise, but it is also about personal responsibility. So you make your big adult choices and you live your big adult consequences.
Yet we love to. So the brain is very good at protecting the ego. The brain is very good. The brain will say, well, I can't make money in this environment because the government have said, so this is why I'm not going to put my prices up because I know everyone's suffering. The price of beans has gone up. So, I'm not going to do it because that's the brain trying to protect the ego. Because if you put out a price, you might get rejected. By the same token, if you get a coach, you might not do the work. So the brain will protect your ego all the time.
At all costs, to the detriment of everything else. And that's right, that is your one of your brain's functions. Congruence, survival. But I don't know, I'm not here for the people who want to survive. I'm here for the people who want to thrive, who want to prosper, who want to create a platform for those coming up behind them to prosper. That's who I'm for. And so the people who want to survive, they I will get on their nerves and they probably will get on mine. And so like I said, there is a price for every customer, but it's also about being okay. I'm not for everyone. I totally understand there will be people listening to you and I right now who are like, who is this horrid, obnoxious, pain in the neck of a woman? I get it. I respect that. I have been called worse. I probably will be called worse. I'm not for everybody. I can't be for everybody. All I can be is me. Everyone else is taken. And so I really respect more than ever. I respect people's right to make what I feel are wrong decisions. And I won't even shade you for that. I respect your right to be, as I said, to make your big adult choices, knowing that you will also need to live your big adult consequences. I get it. I respect your sovereignty. And I can, as a coach, I can share insights of as to why I don't think it will be helpful. But I think it's really, really important that you don't try to override other people's, opportunity to exercise their free will. That's manipulation, and I'm not about that life.
Awesome. Let me just switch tack for a second. Something you said earlier resonated with me because in my, I guess my old industry, everything was per hour. So, if you wanted a PT, that was your hour. You pay for the hour. But then if you didn't turn up for 3 weeks, you wouldn't pay nothing. So obviously now, there are lots of women, I guess, who are trying to charge for their time rather than the result or the solution or the how do you help people get over that mindset?
It's a really great question, and per hour charging is very much what I like to call employee focused thinking, because you are paid as an employee, you're paid for your presence. And it back in the day before there were like employment contracts and stuff, if you didn't show up for work, you didn't make any money. But what we have to recognize is that those who want to create wealth, and I believe it's Warren Buffett who is credited with saying this, if you don't learn to make money in your sleep, you will work every day until you die. People who are creating wealth are not charging per hour because they are not being paid for their labor. And so we then need to ask the question, well, then what are they being paid for? And you highlighted a really important example. Some of them are being paid for the results. Some of them are being paid for access. Some of them are being paid for who they are. Some of them are being paid for what they know. But the thinking around, oh, I'm going to charge per hour, as I said, is an employee mindset, and it's one of the most insidious mindsets that we're basically socialized into this through the entire education system and beyond. And so it really is about helping to unpack and then reconstruct the idea of value. And by helping women to do that, we're able to come to a much more powerful pricing structure that is mutually beneficial. As I said before, those who pay money pay attention. I'm not suggesting for a second that the people who paid you £600 for 3 months are better or worse people than people who, you know, pay you twice as much, three times as much, you know, for that now. But what I am saying, it's not about the person. The people are infinitely valuable. Every human life is infinitely valuable. And so we put that to one side. Your intrinsic worth and your net worth are completely unrelated. But at the same time, there is a value that you need to offer into a marketplace, and that absolutely is quantifiable by cash. And so it's really about recognizing what value you have to offer and what segment of the market you decide to put that offer into. You know, when you look at, I always use the example of Serena Williams' hand masseuse, you know, or Beyonce's hairdresser. They are hairdressing and massaging hands. And yet you can be 100% sure that they are not charging the same amount as hairdressers at your local hairdresser, a hairdressing salon. And I don't even know where hand masseuses work, so we'll put that to one side, but they're not charging the same rates. And the reason they're not charging the same rates is because the value of Serena Williams's hands is different to the value of mine or yours in the marketplace.
Amen to that. It's funny, I've got a client, she owns a bridal shop. She was talking about the same thing, where she used to sell dresses for like really cheaply, and it was always stress, it was always drama. The people were hard work, they wanted discounts all the time. And then she bought more, you know, more expensive dresses, less customers, but makes more money.
100%. You will likely, there is a price for every customer, and there is a and as a result, you know, if you put up your prices, you stop serving one segment of the market with that particular product, and you start serving a different segment of the market. And people, you know, when I look at the clients that pay me the most money versus the clients that pay me the least money, it is a very different experience.
For sure. I mean, hey, I can tell you how many times I used to charge £20 an hour and stuff, and you know,
I remember those days.
£30 an hour. I'd see the person once a week. 2 years later, they still hadn't transformed because the energy wasn't in it. Now I charge.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, it isn't because it isn't in them, and it isn't because they can't, and it isn't, you know, we put our money to the things that we care about. You know, people don't buy what they need. They buy what they want. And it's you know, if someone is willing to put, you know, £20 to a PT session, they are demonstrating, if, you know, to, and again, we think about it in terms of earnings, and that's not always the case. You know, when I look at people who are in fitness competitions and things like that, you know, some of them are putting every spare penny they have into those things because they are using their money to demonstrate what is important to them. And so, yeah, it isn't. I say it often that people buy what they want, not what they need. So your job as someone who sells something is to make people want it. If you can make people want it, then that's when you've got a sale.
Make the right people want it.
Indeed. Make the people. Well, part of the wanting it is, you know, their ability to pay for it, their commitment to use it, all of the things. But yeah, you're absolutely right, it has to be the right people. But again, price is a great way to find the people that or to proxy commitment to the solution. Price is a great way to find that quickly.
Awesome. So lastly, give me some of the biggest myths that frustrate you in the business world. The ones that just make you go, oh, I need to come off LinkedIn now. I need to come off Facebook because I need to get out of this Facebook group because I'm seeing some absolute BS.
Oh my gosh, how long have you got? I mean, you've got the mindset is everything crew. No, it really, really isn't. Mindset definitely isn't everything. You can't out-mindset a lack of skill set. is what I often say in return to that particular one. And the evidence of an improved mindset is better actions. So mindset is everything is one that gets on my nerves.
Can I just jump on that mindset one? Like, mindset without action. Like, I see there is a lot of mindset coaching, and I'm like, yeah, but you can't separate the brain from the body. So you can, you know, everyone, oh, you need to get your mindset right to exercise. I'm like, why don't you take the action first and see what happens to your mindset?
Like the body. That's the thing. And that's where so much of the power, for example, of like somatic work is so important. Your brain doesn't exist outside of your body. And so you can say whatever you like about your mindset. The only way we will know it's any better is if you actually take action. So mindset is everything is a myth that I just think is damaging and ridiculous. Another one that I think is really, really poor is focus on impact and the income will follow. Oh my gosh, that one just, it just makes me do this. And I feel frustrated because it literally is putting on a big giant billboard with flashing neon signs, I have money mindset issues. I have money mindset issues. I don't understand what income is. I don't want to look like I'm an impolite person talking about the money. So if I just focus on the impact, you know, the income will follow. That's a complete and utter crock. Every person on the planet knows someone with an incredible product or who is in business and has incredible products or services. They objectively are best or at least amazing, and they're broke as a goat. Like income following impact is a crock, you know, and it comes from the money and the hard work kind of mantras that we're told, you know, an honest day's work for an honest day's pay. And I'm like, the person who cleans Jeff Bezos's house or Elon Musk's house work way harder than either of them. And yet I can guarantee that he ain't earning that amount of money. And so money doesn't care about hard work. Money doesn't care. Like, it's exactly just understanding. Yeah, that is a myth that, as you can see, it gets me tongue-tied with rage.
I think what happened with that one was that people misread the scripture. Now, I haven't been church for a while. I'm a sinner. I'm sorry. But they misread the scripture where it said money is the root of all evil.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the one.
You mean the scripture that actually reads the love of money and again, you know, we so forget that Jesus didn't live in England and didn't speak English. So the Bible that we're reading is a translation, and it's a translation
of someone else saying, oh, do you know what? I don't like this bit. This won't sit well in the world. Let me just tweak it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as I said, I am a woman of faith. I've come to learn a lot of damage that has been done in the name of religions, both mine and others. And yeah, and like I said, this is why it's important to be a seeker of truth, not just a subscriber to religion. The two are not the same thing. And so, yeah, the misreading of that verse, damage, you know, the lack of money is a root of a whole lot of evil in this world. And so from my perspective, you know, the mindset myth, the money myth, the time money switch over is another one, but also just a focus on the wrong stuff, you know, this myth of you know, people who have more money are better people or more worthy people. Like, I say and maintain that health is the ultimate wealth, because health is the difference between life and death. And because ultimately the richest man on the world, in the world, or the richest woman in the world will give masses of her wealth to reclaim her health if it's lost. And so, you know, it's only well people, it's only healthy people who are able to create and focus on wealth creation. And that's the reason why my focus is never about, you know, hustle till you die and all of that. It's very much understanding that it isn't a question of rich or rested, it's rich and rested. You get both. You get to maintain your health and create wealth simultaneously. So yeah, there are myths. Most of what I see, and again, I don't say this from a I'm so clever. It's not because I'm clever, it's because I know I'm dumb. That I go find out and I go read things and I go and, you know, I go and recognize that I wasn't given all of the tools or all of the tips. That I have to now go and see what actually works. How does this, you know, if we were focused on impact and the wealthiest people on the planet should be doctors and nurses and teachers. You know, they are, you know, helping people. They are, you know, supporting and creating the next generation. So it's clear that in the real world, that's not how things work. That's how we would like things to work, but that's not how things work. And that so many of the myths encapsulate how we would like things to work, but also not how things really, really work.
Yeah, you got it. It's just like when I explain hormones to someone and they're like, I'm like, oh, no, that's not quite how it works. I know that's what, you know, Shelley, the wellness guru, told you how it works.
But, hello, Shelley.
But, you know, that's not quite how it works.
I love it. Yours is Shelley. I talk about Chad and Brad.
Chad and Brad marketers, yeah? Yeah, I get it. I've also got Rita from HR. I haven't talked about her for a while. So yeah. So yeah, it's about time I brought her back, maybe. Yinka, this has been awesome.
So fun.
I'd love to have you back at some point. So we'll talk about that.
I'd love to come back.
Yeah, we'll come back and you can drop some more bombs. No worries. Where can ladies who want to know how to fix their money mindset, grow a business that's profitable, that leaves them wealthy and rested, where can they find you?
Best places to find me on socials is LinkedIn. That's where I am daily, although you can connect with me on Facebook, Insta or Twitter. My name, as you can see on the screen, is the same in all places. I am IG and FB verified. So if you pick up someone and they're not verified, that's not me. And then on email, so best email to get me on is hello@callasuccess.com, and that's ahead of my website finally dropping. That's another myth, that you can't build a big, successful business, profitable business without a website. I have done it, and now I'm finally getting my website in place. So hello@callasuccess.com on email is the best place to find me.
Awesome. And I'll drop all those links in the show notes when this episode drops. So if you watch this and you've felt some fire, share this with a friend, colleague, business owner, just anybody, because I think anybody can benefit from this in any walk of life. And if you're on iTunes, drop a review and tell us how awesome Yinka was. And we'll see you on the next episode. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Meg. Bye.
Bye.